Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 53, Crusader.
Are you quite recovered?
Yes, I think so. Well enough to tell my story, at least.
Good. Sergeant Walter Heller recording. Regarding a discovery made near Alexandria during Operation Crusader in November of 1941. Recording date 5th of September 1997. Any time you're ready.
Right. Where do you want me to start?
Well, you say you were serving in North Africa when it happened.
Yes. I was with the 2nd Royal Gloucestershire Hussars. We weren't even meant to be down in Libya originally, but when the pushback against Rommel started, the whole brigade was reassigned. We were going to help with Operation Crusader. Well, that was fine by me. My brother Francis had died at Arras when the Germans had pushed through the year before. Rommel had been in command then as well, and I hated him for it. I knew I'd never get to do anything about it, but I always used to carry an old picture of him I'd clipped from a newspaper, and I made sure to keep it in my pack, so I'd know him if I ever saw him again, or just in case. Well, there were four of us on the tank crew. Frank Malloy was in command, Ralph McKellar did the driving, and we had a loader by the name of Dickie. Well, I'm afraid I don't remember his second name. He wasn't with us very long. I was the gunner. I've always had good eyes, you see, and you really need that for the gun. It's all very well for Frank to point at a speck on the horizon and give us the order to fire, but I'm the one that needs to line up the shot close to a mile away and turn a Nazi tank into a smouldering wreck before they can do the same to us. I was good at it, though I managed to get three M1340s when the fighting started. I would have liked to have had a crack at the Panzer, but it was the Italians who caught up with us at Bir el Gabir, so I never had a chance. Maybe it was just as well. By all accounts, the Germans had a lot more training, so maybe it would have gone even worse for us. But I still hated having to waste time on the Italians when I knew Rommel and his panzers were out there in the desert somewhere. It was all a bit of a mess, to be honest, that battle. Our air support were meant to have bombed their airfields to rubble, but weather had kept them grounded, so we were being hounded by German planes the whole time. The Italians had unsurprisingly taken a page out of Rommel's handbook, and they backed up their tanks with heavy infantry support, while we were left almost entirely on our own. Frank took to the machine gun when he could keep it pinned down, but it was hard enough to keep our eyes on the enemy tanks without constantly having to worry about a Panzerfaust coming out of view from nowhere. We were still in the Crusader Mark I's back then, so we had the speed to keep ahead of them. But I was basically useless when we were driving, and any time we stopped long enough for me to get an eye on the Italian tank, we ended up a sitting duck for their infantry. All told, I think taking down three of them was a pretty good effort. You know, it was hot that day. I hadn't been in the desert more than a couple of weeks by then, and the sheer heat of the place was still something of a shock. I'm from Cheltenham, you see, so not exactly used to the blazing sun of a Libyan desert. And the Crusader, well, for all its advantages, didn't have very much in the way of ventilation. So we were spending a lot of time trapped in what was more or less a mobile oven. Even then, I could just about stand it. But once the fighting got going and the guns started firing, well, it was only a 2-pounder, but still, the heat was almost unbearable. It was about 2 hours into the battle that it happened. The gun was now so hot I couldn't touch it, and I was having to wipe a steady stream of sweat from my eyes every few seconds. The whole desert seemed to swell and sway in the heat haze, but I dimly heard Frank call an order to fire on the tank from the east. Ralph brought the Crusader to a stop, and I heard poor Dickie call from inside that we were clear to fire, swearing all the time over his burnt fingers. I could see the dark shape of an Italian gun in the distance and was trying to get the angle right, but my vision was so hazy from the intense heat that it was hard to focus my binoculars properly. Then I saw it, a flash of light, a twinkling glint of sun from the enemy tank. In the back of my mind, I knew what it meant, the sun reflecting off their own binoculars, which were trained on us. But my head was so foggy that for all the world, it seemed as though they were winking at me. I tried to say something to the rest of the crew, but my mouth was too dry, and all that came out was a dull croak. It was strange, but even with the intense sunlight reflecting off that endless expanse of bright desert, I still remember seeing the flash of their gun. I didn't hear it, though. They always say that, don't they? That you never hear the shot that gets you. Well, I certainly didn't. Then I was on the ground, with Frank and Ralph standing over me. Ralph was trying to say something, but I couldn't hear it over the intense ringing in my ears. There was the smell of burning metal, and below it, another scent I couldn't quite place. I tried to sit up, but there was such an intense shooting pain in my left leg as I did so that I collapsed again. A few yards away, I could hear our Crusader, smoke pouring from a cracked armour. It surprised me how intact she seemed until I saw the flames creeping up from the hatch. It was then the ringing in my ears faded enough for me to hear it, the screaming from inside the tank. Dickie was still in there. I looked at my companions and saw in their faces that they heard it too. There was nothing they could have done to save the poor fool, of course. If they had trapped him in there, then getting to him would have been impossible, and trying would only have got them killed. So I had to lie there and listen to Dickie roast to death. I don't know how long it took, but it felt like hours. At some point, there must have been a retreat ordered as I saw the rest of the Crusaders pulling back. Frank managed to catch the attention of one of them, and the commander agreed to take me back somewhere the medics could get a look at my leg, although there wasn't room for us all. So they literally strapped me to the top of the tank, and we drove off, leaving Ralph and Frank to make their own way back. It wasn't until I tracked Ralph down almost 10 years later that I found they had been captured and soon afterwards and had spent the rest of the war in an Italian POW camp. Or the way they described it had been quite comfortable. But as far as I knew, at the time we were leaving them to their death. If I hadn't been so delirious with heat and pain, I might have cried. My memory of the trip back is fragmented, and I have only faint impressions of the pain which every vibration of the tank's engine sent through my injured leg as I passed in and out of consciousness. Then there was stillness, shouting. I remember a faint prick in my arm, and then a different sort of haze settled over my mind as numbness and sleep spread through my veins. The next thing I recall with any clarity is my hospital bed. I'd been taken over the border back to Egypt and had ended up in the British military hospital in Alexandria. When I awoke, it was so quiet that for a minute I had the sudden panic thought that I might be deaf. But it was just that after so many days hearing the roar of one engine or another, the peace of an almost empty hospital was so deep and serene that I couldn't understand it. When she came round, the nurse was kind enough to inform me that I was one of the first wounded to have returned from Bir Gabir, but they were expecting more. Sure enough, over the next few days, the ward filled up, and my peace slipped away beneath the steady stream of injured soldiers. I didn't mind too much, as it was still a damn sight better than rolling over the boiling desert in an iron coffin, not to mention the fact that it turned out I wasn't going to lose the leg, which is the sort of news to put you in a very good mood. The doctors told me I'd probably always have a limp, as I'm sure you've noticed, but it wasn't infected, and there wasn't the nerve damage they'd been afraid of, so all told, it was a pretty good wound to get. After a few weeks, I was walking on without too much pain, and the nurses advised me to start taking the occasional walk around Alexandria. I did so, but between the locals and the army, it was a crowded, noisy place, even at night. I took to taking my walks further and further from the hospital and the city centre, and occasionally I'd find myself wandering some way beyond the city limits, at least as far as my leg would allow. It was still hot, even in late December, but beyond the edge of the city, there was a peaceful quiet that I just couldn't find anywhere else. It was 2 days before I was due to return to active duty that it happened. I'd been restless all week, and I couldn't seem to settle down or focus on anything. Once I got out near Pompey's Pillar, the crowd seemed to disperse, and my mind finally cleared a bit. I kept walking, though not paying any real attention to my surroundings, until I found myself rather lost. After several hours, my leg was starting to ache badly, and I took a moment or two to rest against a nearby door. The wood of the door was old and dry, and creaked as I put my weight against it. I didn't even notice it buckling till it was too late. The next thing I knew, I was lying face down in a dingy basement, my leg screaming in fresh pain. It wasn't broken again, which was a relief, but I still had to sit there for a while, recovering from my fall. Nobody seemed to have noticed what had happened, or at least they didn't care, and I took a few moments to look exactly where I was. The basement looked old, really old. I'm not an expert on Egyptian architecture, but it didn't look much like the rest of Alexandria. More than that, aside from the now broken door, there didn't seem to be any entrance to the place, or anything connecting it to the building above. It was dry and cool, and there didn't seem to be anything else of note, except for an old grate made of brass, or maybe bronze, that I assumed led to the city's sewer system. It was, as I finally, painfully dragging myself to my feet, that I saw it. From somewhere far beyond the grate, as the setting sun fell on it, came the glint of something round and white. It was only for a second, and I hadn't spent so long training to spot objects at a distance, I probably wouldn't have noticed it, but there was definitely something there. I approached the metal grate, expecting to smell the sewer beyond, but instead there came the scent of something else. All that at that point I had no idea what it was, but I would have described it as not unlike wood. I tested the grate and found it came away easily from the floor, leaving a hole large enough to climb through without any problems. I had taken to keeping a torch with me on my walks, as I sometimes had a tendency to wander too far, and so I'd be walking back in the dark. Shining it into the now open hole revealed what looked like to be an old tunnel. Whether it was man-made, a naturally occurring cave, or somewhere in between, I couldn't say, but it was easily big enough for me to walk down, and once again I saw that glint of pale white a long way down, so I went in. It was slow going, as my leg was still weak.